you know, want some, get some. Can I get a hell yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, I am a pirate.
You have to go with the pirates because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
It is a first down. Pirate.
Because when you're at East Carolina, you go for it every time. Or you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it.
I think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
You will get them all. I can promise you that.
Painted purple all night long in Eastern North Carolina.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
All right, welcome into Extra Innings Season 7, Episode 2, as we will start out first with all the way from the great, I was going to say the great state, all the way from the great town of LaGrange. It's Kyle Barber. Kyle from
it's
LaGrange.
A state of mind, baby. It's a state of mind is what it is. What's going on, Dave? Sitting here on a Sunday night in the midst of a three-game series, which is kind of rare, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, but obviously with the weather being what it was Friday and then around Greenville and most of Eastern North Carolina, game three being pushed back to Monday, which we need to find a way to win that one tomorrow in Greenville. Don't want to go 0-4 for the week. So big game coming up tomorrow in Greenville to try to salvage something. And
no doubt. And we're very excited making his debut for Extra Innings, not debut for the show, but for Extra Innings. Of course, former East Carolina and North Carolina Wesleyan national champion with North Carolina Wesleyan in 1989, that baseball team, Coach Paul Hill. Welcome back. So glad to have you part of Extra Innings. Thank you for being part of the team.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Like I said, we're in a kind of a pregame, been out of commission for a couple of weeks with some surgery and then felt and got back and then got the flu. As I said, it feels like extra innings going for me, but I'm back and excited. I appreciate to be part of this. And Kyle, like you said, try to get that win tomorrow back home in front of our home crowd.
Yeah, getting the flu while you recover from surgery, that's rough.
Yeah, that's not good, brother. It's not good.
You have it's not a similar story, but I have a friend of mine that recently retired. We're the same age, and she was smart. She had a job where she started young, and I told her that she shouldn't have retired because as soon as she retired, like a day or two later, she got the flu, the A strain, and so she's been sick for like 10, 12 days in a row.
Wow.
It's something crazy.
Ridiculous like that. So anyway, and now Coach Paul Hill, so it's not the same circumstances, but certainly a long period of time. And anyway, we're going to look back at a week, a tough week for the Pirates, but I have said
the Campbell game seems like it was last season at this point. Good God.
Yeah.
We'll look back at that as the Pirates lose that one, unfortunately, 3-2. And, you know, Coach, if you look at three out of the four losses have been by two runs or less. And so you look at that, and I know today, Kyle, I was telling Coach, we'll talk about that. Today's game, the first inning and the eighth inning, if you take those innings away, Pirates look really, really good. No excuses. I know Coach doesn't like – I'm talking about Cliff Godwin, and I'm sure probably Coach Hill too. I'm not a moral victories kind of guy, but I will say that I do believe there's a lot of talent on this team, and we told you guys that – this is a team that's going to take time, but by May or June, look out. I really believe this team is going to be a regional team. I don't know beyond that, but one step at a time. And Coach, you know as well as I do that I always talk about baseball being a marathon, not a sprint. It's such a rigorous schedule.
It is. Talking about the season coming up, you got a lot of new players. You got all these puzzle pieces trying to piece together early in the season. And sometimes you come out with a W, sometimes you don't. But you have to look at the positive things up to this point. I don't like losses by no means. It's part of the game. You don't accept it, but you learn from it. And kind of from what I have listened and seen, you've got the pitching staff is there. It's young. It's holding us in the ball games. Like you said, you take away a couple innings today, and you know, we're right in it. So the pitching's there. We just got to put some hits together, manufacture some runs when we can. You know, 2-0 ball game we lost. I mean, you know, a base hit here or there, a couple stolen bases. Maybe a bunt down somewhere, and, you know, you got a W. So I'm like you, Dave. I think give the Pirates time early in the season, and I think they're going to rock and roll, man.
You know, one of the things I want to talk about, Coach, is the fact that yesterday I know there was 10 men left on base, 10 men stranded. You had two times you had a you had bases loaded. So just like you said, you know, runners in scoring position yesterday was really tough. But we did, in fact, it's really hard for me when I see those four letters, RISP. You know, it's like, what in the world is that acronym? Oh, yeah, that's right, runners in scoring position. Every time I see that on the screen. Right. But that was a tough one. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about is yesterday and today, a lot of walks as a pitcher, because – that can come back to haunt you. And then I know yesterday we also had a couple errors, you know, that, and I'm not criticizing the team, but I'm just talking about, these are things that, my point to this whole thing is that these are things that can be corrected. They can be coached. I think that if Kyle always talks about a team, you know, like look out for this team, because we may start off slow, or, you know, like trying to figure out who we are, the identity of the team, the chemistry of the team. But these are things, these kids are working hard. You know, Cliff Godwin, they're working hard in the classroom. They're working hard on the field. If there was a talent deficit, I would be very concerned. But my non-baseball eyes, I do love baseball, but you have more of the baseball eyes than I do. Just looking at what we have, I think we have a lot of talent. It's just trying to find who we are is where we are right now.
Yeah, I agree. And he's trying and seeing what fits and giving these young players opportunities. When you come in, yeah, you're labeled as a freshman, but if you're a starter, you're not a freshman, you're a starter.
Right.
So, I mean, there's no label on there, freshman. But I reminisce, you know, back when I was a freshman at ECU, long time ago, you got to blow the dust off. But I remember coming in, and there's no excuses. You know, you learn from it. You win, you lose. You get the ball up in the strike zone. It's common sense. You know, they're going to put it out of the ballpark, because 1 through 9, these are collegiate players. And if you remember, all of them were all-conference MVP players in high school level. So, and then you're going up the Carolina rival and ranked number 6 in the nation. There's a reason why they're number 6.
Right.
That doesn't give us any less of value of an ECU Pirate club, but we are young. And if instead of dwelling on the negatives, that you have all those folks out there, and dwell on the positives, and try to work on some of those negative areas, we'll be all right. We'll be fine.
You know, but, Kyle.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, I mean, you know, one thing you got to take into consideration, you know, Campbell maybe not as good this year. Not played well last weekend. I checked. They lost yesterday. But Carolina's a really good basketball team. Really good baseball team.
Their baseball's better than the basketball this year.
Yeah, they swept Texas Tech last weekend. So you look at quality competition, too. Obviously, our standard is to compete with the Carolinas of the world, make it to the College World Series, et cetera. But we're a really young team. And, you know, I hopefully this team improves as the season goes on. I don't like the way the game got away from us today, giving up 11 runs. But overall, Cliff has a proven track record. We are a very young team. You know, we didn't work the portal quite as much as some coaches are now. Didn't go get a lot of junior college players from other schools. We got a few, but not as much as others. So we are young, and I think that's what Cliff wants. Cliff wants to do things the way he's always done and build things. You know, my only question with that isn't so much short-term for this season as long-term. You know, are you going to get a kid like, the, you know, the 17-year-old pitcher? If he lights it up this year, will he be here next year? And that's kind of the world we're living in today. But I do think this team will improve as the season goes on. You see a lot of positives out there. And one way to look at it kind of interestingly, I was talking about it earlier, you want to go for four for the week. Well, even though it's the weekend series, this Monday starts a new week. So we have a chance to get on a hot streak and go undefeated this coming week, beat Carolina at home Monday night, and then go from there. So you don't want to dig yourself a big hole to have to climb out of like we did a couple seasons ago. And, you know, of course, we ended up hosting a regional that year when we, you know, started the season kind of slow. But I think this team will get better as it goes, as the year goes on. They almost have to because the talent's there. We're just young.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, by the way, Coach, when – you have we already knew this week was going to be busy, but it became busier because you have less time. One of my questions I was going to ask you about tonight was, we know the East Carolina UNC game is big. The Old Dominion game has now moved from Tuesday to Wednesday. So you got Monday, Wednesday, and then we're going to have the Keith LeClair Classic on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we have Gardner Webb on Tuesday. So you're playing like six games in, I think, 8 days or something like that off the top of my head.
Well, it's essentially no different from playing Sunday to Tuesday.
Right, I know, but it's still my point is not that it's Mount Everest. I'm not saying that, but I'm just talking about from a health perspective, Coach. Coach actually does a great job training players. How do you keep your players where they're not getting injuries? They don't try to – these guys are young. They're competitive. We all remember being that age. How do you take care of your bodies during that kind of stretch?
Well, when I was the pitching coach over at Westland back in 98, the year I left, the year they won the next national championship at North Carolina Westland College. but they what I told the players, if we had a stream of games like that coming up, you got to be ready. Every pitcher on the staff has to be ready every game. Whether your role is normally a weekend starter, midweek, or whatever, and you have to view those games a little bit differently as far as your staff, but the same as we're trying to get W's. And we want as many W's as we can, you know, along the way. Both of y'all have said, you know, a sweep for a weekend is great. But if you can come out 2 out of 3 every weekend, or at least 80-90%, and win your mid-games, you're going to find yourself at a 40-game win season. But to answer your question, you know, if I was on the staff and I was talking to these pitchers, I'd say, listen, we've been in the ball game. We let the, you know, this game get away a little bit here, two innings, but we're there. And you got to keep motivating these young players. They're kids, or, you know, young men, should I say. And it's the last thing you want to do is get a sour taste in the beginning of the season. And it stretches and it just plagues you throughout. And then, as y'all said, when NIL going on, then people start jumping ship. And then it really gets to be devastating, you know, the mindset. But you got to stay mental tough. You got to stay healthy. You got to get your bullpens in when you can. The guys that don't pitch as much, they're going to pitch. And I would utilize this time to the guys down in the pitching staff, stick them in their inning, see what they can do on some of these, you know, these games, and see how they react to it early in the season. So down the stretch, you know, conference coming up, you know, kind of what you're dealing with.
Coach, one thing that's different about this this stretch coming up, obviously playing on a Monday versus a Sunday, then you switch a Tuesday to a Wednesday. So from that aspect, same amount of time. But what is different is you're going to play different teams every day. You're not playing a weekend series this weekend. You're playing a tournament. So you got Carolina Wednesday, Old Dominion – excuse me, Carolina Monday, Old Dominion Wednesday, then the Keefe LeClair Classic with, you know, three different teams coming in here this coming weekend. So you got five different teams over the span of the next 7 days. So from a coaching standpoint, how do you approach it from that aspect? Because, you know, when you're playing the same team on a weekend series, you kind of get settled into your opponent a little bit. You start to recognize tendencies, et cetera, how to pitch people. So how, from a coaching standpoint, is your preparation different playing five different teams in a week?
Well, it's kind of tough because you don't know anything about them other than the Carolina game that you played in a neutral zone and then you played at their place. Now you're coming back at our place. The advantage is playing home, you know, tomorrow and getting those guys pumped up. They're on our turf, guys. Hey, you know, we were in the ball game 2-0 here, even though we, you know, kicked the ball around a little bit on that. Today's game, we were right there other than those two innings. And, hey, let's pick up this win. Let's get it and then move on to the next. But you got to take one pitch, one inning, one game at a time. That's a long stretch. Like you said, Kyle, 5 out of 7 days. It's no different. Like you said, you broke it down great. But five different teams – in 1 week. How do you approach that? Well, you kind of get as much information about their team as you can, what they've done with other teams, you know, beginning the season, which is early, and you kind of size up your pitching staff the best you can. You got our classic, you know, you would love to sweep that, but you can't look too far ahead. But at the same time, you got to kind of plan your week out accordingly to your starters at this moment in time, you know, early in the season, your short relief, your relievers. And then you may see some of your relievers being starters this week in a different role and just seeing how they adapt to it. And you might find something that you didn't know about, you know, the preseason and the fall. And next thing you know, you got your staff kind of lined up the next couple of weeks, you know, that you didn't know, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And then you look at the Keefe LeClair Classic this weekend, and we'll touch more on the Carolina game and look back a little bit at the games we played. But you got the Keefe LeClair Classic this weekend. You got Kent State, a good program out of the MAC. Indiana State, a program that's been really good in recent years. And then, obviously, Virginia Tech out of the ACC. So, do you have any thoughts on any of those teams? I don't know how much you have studied the opponents.
All those teams are beatable, but they're quality baseball programs. Every one of them have, you know, come a long ways. I mean, like you said, you've got Carolina on Monday, ranked number 6 in the nation. You got ODU, and then help me out. You got Indiana,
Kent State, Indiana State, and Virginia Tech.
I mean, they're all quality programs. But we've got them here on our, you know, backyard. So you got to take advantage of the home games. Win as many of the home games as you can, no matter whatever it takes. If that means you got to use 5 pitchers in the game, and piece it together. Let's get it. Take one pitch, one inning, and take one game at a time, and let's get that W and then move on.
We're doing Johnny Hole stuff tonight, so we're doing that. But let's do some questions. questions and comments here, obviously. Justin Butts, by the way, coach, says this has to be one of the better UNC teams I've seen in a while. Agreed. They are really good. And they're, like coach said earlier, there's a reason why they're number six in the country. Chuck says, in order for us to be a regional team, we need to be at full strength. Need Johnson, a few of our pitchers are back. Amen, Chuck. I couldn't say that better myself. In fact, Justin says, wait till we get health. I think we'll be good. We call him Johnny Stats, JR, our good friend, from the Commonwealth of Virginia, obviously, and Greenville also. Johnny says, eight out of George Mason's 13 runs and four of UNC's first five runs today were the result of Cliff's dreaded free 90s. We need to improve on that greatly. And, Coach, we talked about that, you and me, earlier, and Kyle, about the walks. And certainly that kind of stuff can get you in a lot of trouble. When you get those guys on base, when they get on base, then anything can happen. So I agree with Johnny. And then also, this is another thing that he mentioned, our good friend Matt Semenza's favorite pitcher, D'Lo. He says D'Lo can't be put in a high leverage situation if he's going to continue to surrender eight walks and two and a third innings.
Yeah, that's tough. The walks will kill you. You're almost destined if there is one or two walks with no runs, you're going to have a run scored almost every time. I mean, nothing against our Pirates that we can't shut out. Sometimes you can, but it's almost inevitable that it's, you know, a run will be scored. Unfortunately, you get a walk, a base hit, an error, a sacrifice fly, and that runs in.
Do walks start to become contagious? If you got one pitcher and he starts walking people, and then he just continues, you bring somebody else out of the bullpen and they just start walking people, does it start to become, can it kind of overcome your staff? How do you avoid something like that kind of trickling in mentally and it just being a mechanics thing?
Well, it's kind of a catch 22. I'm pitching oriented 110%. So it's one of those things I understand. Hey, you go out and talk to your pitcher. Hey, how do you feel? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Hey, I'm gonna bring, you know, such and such in. No, coach, I got him. And then you're like, do I give this pitcher one more hitter? Maybe one hitter too late. So you kind of playing, you know, the chess game. You know, hey, I want to show them that I have faith in them, but I don't want it to get out of hand. So in that situation, early in the season, you know, kind of the way I used to do things is it was just that gut feeling. And, you know, I would kind of have kind of a assessment before I went out to the mound to talk to my pitcher saying, hey, you know, you're this close of striking out number one, number two batter. You were this close. You got it up in the zone just a couple inches. It's just a matter of locating your pitches now. You're missing that close, almost like a hitter fouling balls off and then striking out. No strikeout's a good strikeout, but if you take the good from that strikeout, as far as was it inside, outside, where you're a little out front, we were right on it, and he's fouling off straight back. You know, he's right on that pitch, kind of like the pitchers. Sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, this game is won by inches, and it just may be as something as simple as adjustments. So in that case, Kyle, I'd look at the hitter, lefty, righty. What he did the last at bat, it's tough. It's tough early in the season because you haven't seen enough from your staff to go deep in your staff because you really hadn't had the opportunity. But I believe a week like this, being home, if you're going to do something, go kind of deep in your staff, do it now in front of your home crowd. Yep. Because you do have that number 10 player on the field.
And boy, do we ever. We have such a great atmosphere. Looking forward to, obviously, Dorothy said, Coach, there's no place like home. So we'll have a great home stand. And certainly with these five games coming up. And when you look at, you were talking about with the pitchers, the only way these pitchers are going to get experience is putting them out on the mound. There's nothing, no matter how great our program is, no matter all the stuff, and they are well prepared. There's no player that can say they were not prepared when you think about Coach Godwin, his staff, the support staff, on and on and on. And the actual players itself that are upperclassmen, the Dixon Williams of the world, are doing an excellent job on looking out for these younger guys. But these guys, I think it's a matter of these guys are going to have to grow up in a hurry. Mm-hmm. It's not that they don't have talent. It's the lack of experience. And you can't you can't fault them when they haven't played, you know. But that Jenkins kid, once again, is going to be special. And you look at him, there's a lot of bright spots to this program already for this early season. And I remind fans that every season's different, where one season we may start off red hot and then kind of fall apart at the end or towards the end or whatever, and then get ourselves back together. We get in a regional. It could be where we start off slow and win a million games in a row, host a regional. You just never know what and who's to say, you know, every year that I think we're going to Omaha and we have this great team, we haven't. You never know when something crazy could happen where could this be the team? And I know everybody, I'm not predicting that right now. I'm just saying don't give up on this team, because if there's ever been a time that they need you, it's definitely now when they're trying to figure themselves out.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody's giving up. I mean, it's way too early for that. We're way too young. And, you know, like I say, we took 2 out of 3 from Mason. I think the midweek loss to Campbell, and it seems like we always friggin' do that. By the way, here's an idea. This is just I'm just brainstorming, and I'm not second guessing Cliff or anybody, but I quit playing at Buies Creek for our first road trip every friggin' year, midweek. if every damn time we go down there and lose, quit doing it. Play them, move the game. Let's play here first, and then play there second. Yeah. I mean, it seems like we go down there every friggin' February and lose. Stop doing it. Change the schedule around. Quick little rant. But to tomorrow, Carolina, not for the season, because it's way too early to talk about confidence for the season. The season's way too long. This is baseball, not football. But how for early season confidence, you know, as you move forward for the rest of the week, how big would getting a win tomorrow over Carolina be for such a young baseball team?
It would set the tone for the week. It would set the tone for the week. A win tomorrow, a good win be great, but any win is great when you're in this situation. And it would set the tone for the week, guaranteed. It would set the tone.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you lose it, you know, you kind of – you don't want to start panicking, but you almost at that point feel like you got to go 3-1 the rest of the week. But if you take care of business tomorrow – you still feel that way, but you feel that way with confidence versus panic.
They just got to play loose. They got to play loose tomorrow. And, hey, we got number 6 Carolina team coming here. Throw away number 6. Throw away Carolina. They're on our home turf. We're back home. Let's give our fans a great game. And hopefully we got one more run more than they do in the ninth inning. And win that one. And I really think, Kyle, Dave, it will set the tone for the whole week. I think this can be a really great week, or it can kind of be a seesaw week until next weekend, unfortunately.
And, Coach, and Kyle, this could actually be one where, you know, you have a walk-off. Can't you see that ball now left center field and it's on Charles Boulevard? I mean, we win the game. The place goes nuts. I mean,
right.
That'd be great, but any way we can do it, walk off would be fantastic. But I'll take blowing an 8-run lead and winning by 1 run in extra innings. I mean, however we can get it done.
A win's a win.
That's exactly right. As long as we win, that's the most important thing. And with this group coming up, with old, we talked about Old Dominion, and we talked about coming up also with the Keith LeClair Classic. Do you ever think that sometimes these guys put too much pressure on themselves when you have Keith LeClair, because he meant so much to the program? I know these kids didn't know Keith LeClair. They didn't play for Coach LeClair. But if you're in our program, you definitely know who Keith LeClair was and his legacy. And that's one thing that, you know, I hope it's almost like a, to me, I love the Keith LeClair Classic because to me, it's like a pseudo or early regional for us, because you've got all those teams. It's a great atmosphere. People love Coach LeClair. The LeClairs are coming back. You know, Audrey is actually now back in Greenville.
You ever run into her at the hospital, Dave?
I have. I saw her a month or two ago at the cafeteria, of all things. But she's doing very – I think she's doing very well. But anyway, my thing is, when you said play loose, that's the reason I brought that up. Baseball is a game. Go out there. I think sometimes a lot of us – I'll say to speak about myself – put way too much pressure on myself, whatever I'm doing. Don't put the pressure on yourself. Easier said than done, I know, because you want to win. But at the same time, it goes back to what you said, Coach. I think when you get into that, you talked about one pitch. You know, it's one pitch. It's one inning. It's one game. Because if you get ahead of yourself, and we're talking about today with the walks, there's going to be some times that you state the obvious that you're going to walk people, because I was explaining to my daughter this afternoon, Mackenzie, watching the game, if they throw that ball over the plate, this isn't batting practice. If they throw that ball over the plate, it's out of here. And so I think there's some pressure there too, knowing that North Carolina, number six in the country, knowing they're very good, knowing that, hey, if I put that over the plate, that's going to go yard. It's out of here.
Well, my philosophy, I love simple. Keep it simple. Every pitch has a purpose. Every pitch. And whatever pitch you decide to throw, is it coming from the dugout? Is it coming from the catcher? Whatever their system is, you've got to have confidence before you throw that pitch. And if you don't have the confidence and you're doubting that pitch, then you should have never thrown that pitch in the first place. So every pitch has a purpose. And whatever pitch you decide to throw, you give it not 90%, 70%, 110% every time you release that ball. And if you go with that attitude and fine-tuning some things along the way, if you're a little high, a little outside, if it's not breaking, you just got to work through it. And as you know, I had said earlier, playing loose, we're back home. Play loose. Whether we're, you know, it's the pitchers, the defense, and have fun. Go back to the basics. Don't put all this pressure. It's enough pressure trying to win the ball game. But try to eliminate some of that pressure. Go out there, home field. Yeah, we got Carolina here. I'm tickled to death to play Carolina at our place. And it would be even more wonderful to win against Carolina at East Carolina. So let's take care of business and do that, and then move on for the, you know, the next game and the next game. But you know, trying to look, you got to do some planning ahead with your staff. I get it, but at the same time, you got to break it down and keep these pitchers motivated to go out there and do what they're supposed to be. And they've been doing a great job. And our defense, for the most part, has been doing a good job. And we just got to go back. We can't make excuses. We're young. But again, they are starting, and you got to play like a senior, not a freshman.
Yeah, and we were in both the games against Carolina, so I think we'll come out fired up tomorrow. Dave, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say to both of y'all, isn't it amazing? I'm just making an observation here. Just dawned on me. Isn't it amazing that college baseball, that UNC, Duke, State, all of the triangle schools in the ACC, we got Virginia Tech this weekend on Sunday. It's amazing how football, they can't play us, but baseball, they can play us. Isn't that funny how ironic how they won't play us in – they'll play us in one sport, in baseball, not complaining.
Right.
But why not basketball and football?
Well, there's a couple of easy answers to that one. There's three answers to that. One, baseball, you know, the schedule is kind of done year to year. It's not done long term like it is in football and to an extent basketball. Two, the TV money and the whole Power Four, formerly Power Five deal, is starting to seep its way into baseball, but it hadn't completely taken over the game like it has football and basketball. And then the third answer is, you know, in baseball, and again, this bullshit is with Power Four conferences will seep in more and more and more as it starts to creep into baseball, particularly during the NIL era, and you're going to have SEC teams, ACC teams, and, you know, Big Ten teams that care enough, and Big 12 teams, they're going to start pouring money into baseball, NIL, et cetera. It's going to start to change. But up to this point, you know, when people look at East Carolina baseball, the NC State's and UNC's, you know, they pretty much look at it as even. You know, our program is just as good as their program. In football, they like to pretend they're better than us, even though it's complete nonsense. It's proven by the Military Bowl. And in basketball, they are better than us. So, but I do think that, unfortunately, as more and more money starts to pour into this stuff, you know, not anytime soon, but if there's not there's going to be a paradigm shift in college athletics as a whole at some point where I do think you're going to end up having that separation where you have the Big Ten and SEC, you know, form two 25-team leagues, and we're going to have 50 teams playing at the highest level in all sports. And I think at that point things will change. But I think that's your answer, Dave, that the why we play them in baseball, home and home, and not basketball and football, is because it's, you know, the biggest answer is baseball hasn't been as corrupted as football and basketball has at the Power Four level, and our baseball program's on the level of anybody.
Correct. It is.
Hey, Coach, this is a sport, being baseball, to Kyle's point, where it's only a matter of time. I'm a firm believer. The people on the show call me blindly optimistic, but I'm a firm believer that we will win a national championship at East Carolina. I just don't know when. I don't know where we're going to Omaha. Don't pretend to be a talking head, even though we have a show at least once or twice a week. But with this show, our seventh season, by the way, we're no rookies, eighth season overall, this program is, in my eyes, only going to get better. We have the baseball expansion. We paid for that. And how about that? We're not like UNC Charlotte, where they get the legislature to give them money somehow, some way. Yes, that was a jab, because I feel like that our program deserves to be. I think this whole nonsense, and I'll say this really quick and move on, but I think this nonsense of they can't give money to athletics is crazy in our state laws, when we all know that the point I was making earlier, too, about our teams playing each other with the triangle sports, that's an economic generator. Chapel Hill. You want to sell out at Chapel Hill and Raleigh? Get East Carolina to come there. Duke, East Carolina, come to Wallace Wade. So, hopefully we'll see how all this stuff shakes out. But anyway, college baseball is where it's at. I tell you, Coach, I love it because it's very underrated. Just want to get your thoughts, Coach, on another thing that bothers me. I still am not a fan of the pitch clock. I was getting ready to say shot clock. I'm not a fan of it, but it is what it is. I just wanted to get your take on it, being a coach and obviously a pitching coach and a pitcher.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it either. We all know why it was in place. But it's almost a speed up for not allowing certain pitchers the style of pitchers that they are, as far as, you know, some that quick work a little bit quicker and stuff. And that's just how they do things. But to be more focused on that clock and seeing the clock, and you're on that mound, you get in a rush factor. Some pitchers, you know, I never had a clock when I pitched. So, you know, I would have the clock I had was when I played at East Carolina, Billy Best and Gary Overton, they'd come out there and say, you need to speed up a little bit or you need to slow down. That was my clock. Or when I played for Coach Fox over at Westland, the same thing. So to see that clock ticking, it's a mental effect on the pitchers. You know, I'm not saying it's all bad because it speeds up the game. It doesn't lag. You know, baseball is kind of a lag sport. You know, it can kind of drag, but that's baseball. You know, that's just, you know, the nature of the game. It's not fast paced like basketball or, you know, back in the Dean Smith era, you know, what he did. That's why the shot clock's been put in place.
Yeah, exactly.
So with that being said, I think it's to the advantage of some pitchers and some teams because they are a very fast-paced team. I know when I coached and we used to take the international teams to Puerto Rico, when I took the international team that I coached, the Southern Thunder Longhorns out of South Carolina, we went down there and I had 21 players. And I said, listen, guys, you guys have never played down here in Puerto Rico. We're on their turf. And let me tell you, it's going to be a different experience. And they didn't have a shot clock, but their level of intensity and their game was three times our speed.
Wow.
They were so fast-paced that our pitchers could barely come set because that's why a lot of pitchers in Puerto Rico come to the States. They balk all the time. They don't come set. They're so fast. They come set, boom, they're just chunking it. Their base runners, the same thing on the base pass. But getting back to the clock, I think it has advantage to some teams and some pitchers. And a disadvantage to some pitchers and some teams. I really do.
Yeah, and of course we know it was all done because ESPN tried to air more college baseball through, you know, streaming and obviously on regular television also.
Correct.
You know, not something that was ever a concern, you know, a couple years ago with baseball, and now it is, which is a good problem to have. I wish they'd come up with a different way to speed up the game. You talk about coaching in Puerto Rico. I just wanted to ask you in general. I listen to a lot of love a lot of retro wrestling, listen to a lot of old pro wrestling podcasts. And Dutch Mantel booked in Puerto Rico a lot. Booked, if you're not a wrestling fan, means he ran a promotion in Puerto Rico. And he talks about how crazy the fans were down there, how the atmosphere was just so different than an American wrestling crowd. You had to watch because the fans would cut you. Obviously, baseball being completely different than professional wrestling. I'm sure the players weren't worried about being knifed. But were the crowds different? What were the baseball fans like in Puerto Rico?
Their fans in Puerto Rico are so intense. I don't mean hateful. They welcome us, but they want to win. And it's almost in a good way. I don't mean this. Puerto Rico, that's my second family down there. They're dear friends of mine. And I'll have to get with you guys to get some of my dear friends Paco Francisco and Santos and those guys on the show one time and be a little bit more in depth. Related to Roberto Clemente, you would have a field day of an hour. You'd probably extend it to extra innings, 2 or 3 hours with a show with them.
Don't give Dave any ideas, Coach.
But to answer,
I worked on speeding up the podcast.
But to answer your question, it is a treat to play down in Puerto Rico because it's so intense. The atmosphere is electric. They love their sports so much. I didn't know this. You're talking about baseball. Do you know their number one sport is basketball?
Did not know that. I do know they love baseball. There's a lot of baseball stadiums out there. In fact, Dutch Mantel talked about running wrestling shows in a lot of outdoor baseball stadiums. That's redundant. In a lot of baseball stadiums. So, yeah, that's what kind of made me tie in the question, him talking about how rowdy the crowd were, and you're kind of saying the same thing. Obviously, baseball being a different sport, or, you know, professional wrestling, whether you consider sport or not, but still the same intensity from the fans.
The intensity and the love for their players.
Yeah.
They have so much pride in their Puerto Ricans. I don't know if you guys knew this, but for the past 2 years, Steffi and I have been the ambassadors for the Puerto Rico teams that come up here for the Little League Softball World Series.
Yeah.
And my Puerto Rico team got beat out by Mexico this past year.
Uh-oh.
So they called me up and say, hey, we didn't make it. And I said, I am so sorry. He says, but the Mexican head baseball coach, I mean, a softball coach, would like for you to represent them as their ambassador. And I said, all right. But I, with open arms, Steffi and I, we always get them tours of the East Carolina campus and the East Carolina facility. We usually treat them to pizzas at Familia's restaurant over there on Fire Tower. We love doing that and supporting, you know, the girls and stuff. But the Puerto Ricans, like any smaller country or, you know, very intense. It's a treat. It's an honor to be playing over there. The first time I went there in Puerto Rico, we were in Guyama, Puerto Rico, and I was standing with a buddy of mine. His name is Jackie Conway from Aiden, North Carolina, where I live now. And he was one of my coaches. And we were standing on home plate in Puerto Rico. And he used to catch me at the American Legion team. And we were looking there. I said, Jackie, did you ever think we would be standing in Puerto Rico with baseball? And we were looking around. And he says, man, the atmosphere doesn't change. Player, coach, it doesn't, fan, it doesn't matter. It's a treat. So just let me know when you want to do a Puerto Rican baseball segment, and I'll line it up with you guys.
Sounds great. We can take a road trip to
we can do that too.
San Juan. We're gonna take a road trip to San Juan.
Well, we're gonna go due south to Ponce, Salina, and Guyama.
All right. Will you be our ambassador for TSO?
Yeah. Steffi hasn't been to Puerto Rico, so she will be our advisor, I guess.
Okay. All right. We'll let you hook that all up. Guys, we need to do the pitcher of the week. In fact, Johnny Robertson chiming in. Coach, he's going with Ethan Young. Ethan Young as pitcher of the week. So I'll tell you what, Johnny, this week we're going to be diplomatic and we'll do our fan of the week pick with Johnny Robertson. He's going to go with Ethan Young. And our player of the week, PGX Gloves player of the week, is Keenan Bowman. So I'll tell you what, we'll go with Johnny's so good that, you know, coach, you can't go against Johnny's stats. So
hey, he's the best. Those are two good ones.
No doubt. And then coach,
so PGX Gloves. So PGX Gloves is back this year, Dave.
Yeah.
When do I start getting to do the reads? We gotta get it ready. I gotta do my reads again for PGX Gloves. Right.
We need to do it. We'll do it at the end of the show.
I'm not ready. I haven't got the material yet for this year.
All right. Well,
we gotta do it. We'll save it for next show.
All right. Coach, this is for you. He says, I'd like to hear what Coach has to say about this. VMI Virginia Tech has batted in 48 innings. Batting in 48 innings and has accumulated 67 stolen bases already. And they play Virginia next, so we'll see how that works out against them.
Well, there it goes where that pitching clock plays an effect. If you didn't have the clock, you could definitely slow that game down in that running game quite a bit. But with the clock, you've got that on their side. They're still in – how many bases was it? 60?
67.
And 40 – how many innings?
48.
Say what now?
Wow. Well, let me –
that doesn't even sound real.
This is how I can come back with this. They haven't played East Carolina yet. How about that?
There you go. Coach, keeping it real. I love it. I love it. No doubt.
In fact, VMI has stole that many vases of Virginia Tech.
They said Virginia Tech.
Is that? Oh, he's talking about. Is he talking about military?
Let's read this. What here goes to say about VMI has been.
Is that Military Institute? Is that what he's talking
about? VPI would be Virginia Tech.
That's right. That's right.
VMI is Virginia Military. So VMI is stealing bases like that. That is incredibly interesting. I know nothing about VMI's baseball program.
I don't either.
Except they play in the Big South. I mean, I guess they still play in the Big South. That's all I got on VMI.
Well, it would go back to that clock. You would have to. Nowadays, with the pitching clock, you would have to hold your runners on, quick pitch, mix it up as best you can. I mean, you got to set clock. So, obviously, they are utilizing that clock to their advantage very well. And, again, we don't know who they played. We don't know the staff they've been running against. And nothing against them. Those stats are off the chain. Those are incredible stats.
How about this, Coach? They've also drawn 75 walks.
Wow.
Yeah, so they must have a decent program then.
Yeah.
Well, competition in place, but still.
Yeah, I'm about to look up VMI's baseball schedule here.
All right.
Just since we're talking about it.
Hey, Coach, you actually, I think you know this guy, a former pitcher for the Pirates, John White.
Oh, yeah.
He says, agree with Ethan Young. His first outing was a bit shaky, but his outings after that have been awesome. So you're a pitcher, Coach. John is a pitcher. So if y'all are saying that, I've got to go with the pitchers because that's your expertise.
VMI is undefeated. They have played a three-game series with Maryland Eastern Shore and a three-game series with Coppin State. So not exactly the toughest competition in the world, but still very impressive.
Very impressive.
To be doing that kind of stuff on the base paths. I don't care who you're playing. And also, it's VMI. I mean, level of competition. It's not like it's East Carolina playing Maryland Eastern Shore and Coppin State doing that. It's VMI playing Maryland Eastern Shore and Coppin State doing that. So, very impressive.
Well, very impressive early in the season to have those stats. That's very promising from the season to come.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they should do well in their conference, too.
Absolutely.
I said they're undefeated and have, like, four guys with 10 stolen bases at VMI. Well,
they're going to blow some records away if they keep that up.
No doubt. And it's not how you start. It's how you finish. So we'll see how that works out.
Coach,
one question I have for you is I was thinking about I'm itching to go down to Florida. My oldest nephew is a Disney intern right now, but also not only to see him, but spring training. And so that the reason I bring that up, do you have any good spring training stories as a fan, as a player, anything that maybe a celebrity or anything that you could tell us about that would interest the listeners and viewers?
Well, me personally, when we were down there for spring training, I was located at Cocoa Beach, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
That facility down there, let me see, 4 decades ago.
Okay.
It's a great experience. I've had opportunity as a player, coach, and fan to go to some spring training camps, games, and it's really a treat because you get chance to really see some of the top-notch superstars and superstars to be that haven't even began their journey as a ball player, and to see them in their element and getting some good workouts and reps and innings and stuff, and sometimes diamond in the rough. I kind of use the analogy is all my players back when I coached were diamonds. They wouldn't be on the team if they were not at some capacity going to be able to help us and produce. But it is the coaching staff and the players' job to shine them up, cut them just right, piece them and fit them together where need be, that best helps the team for that season. Although throughout the season, things do change. Your role, you know, if you're talking about pitching, it may be short relief, and next thing you know, you're a starter, or you were a starter and you're better utilized as a stopper. So down in spring training camp, you know, there it's kind of a relaxed atmosphere to a certain degree, but you're trying to earn a spot on that roster, and not only a spot, a starting spot. And then once you earn that starting spot, you got to maintain that spot throughout the season,
right,
week in and week out. So a lot of fond memories, you know, all, you know, as a fan, as a coach, and as a player, down in, you know, down in any of the training camp, any training camp you get chance to go down there, Boardwalk on Baseball in Orlando, you know, back in the day, been to several of those throughout.
Coach, this is something that I knew about, but I totally forgot. Thank you, John. As always, you're another great guy with stats. And Kyle, I don't know if you or Coach know this, but Maryland Eastern Shore broke a 54-game losing streak this past week, which sounds crazy to me as well. How do you lose 54 games in a row?
You suck.
yeah, you stick to basketball at that college.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. 54 games in a row, that is unbelievable.
Yikes.
How do you lose it? I'm assuming they got a new head coach this year.
Yeah.
That's bad. I do remember them having a good basketball team when Coach when Dave Odom's boy was there. And that school that upset UVA 16-1 when that Maryland – or was that – no. Was that Maryland Eastern Shore or was that Maryland at Baltimore or some crap? Do you remember what I'm talking about, Dave?
I know.
Yeah.
It was UBMC or something like that, I believe.
University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Lane Odom, the Labradors.
Yes. Correct, yeah.
Yeah, it's UMBC. Thank you, John. I thought that was the case.
Okay, it's a different school. Okay. Yeah.
Maryland, Baltimore County. Can you imagine? I don't want to imagine, but can you imagine the fans if we lost 54 straight in baseball?
Oh, that would never. I mean, that would be nobody would survive that. It would be a change. About 25 straight, there'd be a change. Somebody would be gone midseason.
Yeah. I'm glad those young men finally broke that streak. They set a record for that too.
That reminds me of Prairie View A&M in football.
Oh yeah.
The 1AA, now FCS levels, back in the 90s. But longest losing streak in the history of football. I have like 9 seasons without a win.
Jeez.
But anyway, talked about UMBC, which makes me think of basketball, and we'll touch on this, and then that'll, I guess, start wrapping it up. But Pirates with a big win today over UTSA, put up 96 points. Hoops team's been playing well lately. We lost at Tulane the other night, but really we're in that one. I think East Carolina's playing as good in basketball. Hadn't won them all, but, you know, since mid-January, I think we played about as well in basketball with the exception of that Rice game as we have in a while. So we get the win today over UTSA. I did not watch. I was watching the baseball game, but based on the results, I should have been watching basketball. Pirates have, what, 4 regular season games to go now?
No, 3.
So I'll say let's win out and get to 18 wins. That would be 18 or 19 wins. Was that win number 16 today?
Yes, it is, 16 and 12.
So we can get the 19. Yeah, let's win these next 3 and get the 19 wins.
Hey, we can
go make a run in the conference tournament.
Get 2 wins in the conference. You could be in the tournament. You could be 21 wins there, which definitely would be CBI and maybe bubble team for
I think we win one more. I think we win one more. We're probably CBI. But the question is, you know, will Gilbert take the CBI invitation? I think he needs to.
I
think the only way we get NIT, Dave, I think we'd have to win out and then make the championship game of the conference tournament. And I still think because of strength schedule, we'd be bubble. So I think it's going to be win the tournament, go to the big dance, or either CBI. Need to finish hot here. I think the better we play down the stretch, regular season and conference tournament, the more likely Gilbert is to accept a bid to a CBI. And somebody needs to show Gilbert video of that place sold out for the semifinals of the CIT back in 13. And, you know, with the lack of basketball success we have here, we cherish those moments in those secondary tournaments because we hadn't had them. Where basketball's been so bad. The CIT, back when that was something we could go to, we're not allowed to play in that in the American CBI, NIT, or NCAA only. You know, we won it, and it was a big deal. Beat Weber State in the finals, and there was 500 or so people at Pitt Greenville Airport welcome the team back. So I hope that's something Gilbert realizes, that while it is a secondary tournament, you know, even to the NIT, having the opportunity to play in the CBI while some teams scoff at it. You know, I go back to Butler. That kind of put Butler on their run. You know, they won the CBI. The next year they lost to Duke in the Final Four. So sometimes those tournaments can really propel you if you go play in them well, play well in them and win them.
Well, also to play past your regular season in conference.
Yeah.
For as a recruiting standpoint.
Right, Coach.
It's huge. It's huge.
No doubt. And also the fact that, like Kyle said, we got to show love to basketball. The one sport that we really, 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 really have to show love to is basketball, basketball, basketball. And I know this is a baseball show, but the reason why we do well in baseball is because we show love to baseball. We show love to football. There's a lot of our Olympic sports we're doing very well in. And men's basketball, I'm not saying I'm happy. That means we're going to have a winning record pretty much. I guess if we lost out and we lost in the tournament, we wouldn't. But
yeah.
But let's just say I'm confident there we're going to have a winning record. And that's a big deal. And we have 8 wins in American. I know it's not the same teams, but it's the most wins we've had ever in the conference. That's another thing we can hang our hat on. And, Coach, I want to get your opinion, too. I know that I saved probably the most controversial question for last. No, it's not bad. I just want to get your thoughts on NIL as far as if you're a coach of today, as far as NIL is concerned, do you basically pay your players?
I wouldn't sleep at night. I would not sleep at night. The NIL, you knew at some point it was coming. It has gotten out of hand. The love for all the games is that dollar sign. And it's sad because our young players, and I'm talking across the board, in some cases don't even have the opportunity to look at the next level. It's almost speeding us up, fast forwarding us, and they can't even enjoy their college years. The coaches are headaches and migraines every night, sleeping with one eye open, you know, one eye closed, not knowing from day to day who's going to stay, who's going to leave. That part is sad for our sports, college athletics.
Coach.
I do agree without our players, there's no fans, you know, and without our fans, we have no revenue. So something's got to give. It has gotten out of hand.
And you just said a key word, revenue.
Yep. It has gotten out of hand. And I do believe if something doesn't happen soon, a lot of fans are going to get a bad taste, and you're going to see attendances going down.
Well, what needs to happen, and you said the word revenue, revenue sharing begins in July. And when that becomes a thing, to me, ECU, first thing we need to do is quit having the Pirate Club as a separate entity. Fold the Pirate Club into the athletic department. So all Pirate Club donations count towards what? Revenue. Then you can have revenue sharing. Then you can do away with the collective. So Grandpa Joe, who don't want to play them players, Buck gives to the Pirate Club will just be given to the Pirate Club, and then he'll be participating in revenue sharing versus NIL. NIL, as it stands, needs to go away when revenue sharing becomes a thing. And you know, what NIL was supposed to be is what it needs to be. If you are good enough as a young man to go get a deal from Nike or go get a deal from Greenville Toyota or go get a deal from, you know, Mayflower Seafood or McDonald's or pick it local or national, you can go out and make that money. Otherwise, you're getting paid what your institute can pay you. But asking Kyle and Dave and you and everybody else to foot the bill for players, you know, it gets old after a while. And I give the NIL. I'm a member of Team Boneyard. I give to the Pirate Club. I buy season tickets. You're going to bleed the well dry. You're asking people for too much. They're beating down the same doors over and over. The same people they're asking for to give the NIL is the same people they're asking for Pirate Club. So the first thing we need to do at our university when revenue sharing becomes a thing is July is make the Pirate Club part of the athletic department. So you make one donation and it goes to revenue sharing, because I think that's what all these schools are going to do. I think collectives are going to go away once revenue sharing becomes a thing. And I hope they do, because it's – and another thing that needs to happen, these players – coaches have to sign contracts, okay? So once you – if you're making above – you know, let's say there's a team minimum once revenue sharing begins. If you're making above that team minimum, you should have to sign a two-year contract. And if you want to transfer to somewhere else, you have to pay a exit fee. You have to buy your contract out, or where you're going has to give you the money to do so. This is, you know, if you're going to – if you want to be – you careful what you ask for. You want to be treated like an employee – excuse me. If you want to get paid, you're going to get treated like an employee. And they need to start having to sign contracts. At this point, you know, I'll use football for example. Rajay Harris. Rajay is going to be kind of the last of a dying breed, at least for the short term, where he was at a school for 4 or 5 years. You know, and he went down, you know, having his best year as a senior in the Military Bowl. When he looks back, I'm a Pirate. He'll have his own. Where the hell are these kids who play at 3 or 4 schools? Where are they going to go back to? Who are they going to give to? You know, what are they going to call home? And that's something that I don't think they think about when they're transferring from East Carolina to NC State, from NC State to USC, from USC, you know, to Washington State, wherever. What is going to be their lineage? What's going to be their legacy? Where are they going to call home? And at 19, 20, 21 years old, you don't give a damn about that. But when you're 45, you sure do. And I don't know, it's sad. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, Caden Hauser right now. Everybody loves him. You know, will he be here 2 years from now?
Well, you hit it, Kyle, to it. I totally agree with you on the contract and an exit fee, or they pay it back or something. It's out of control. Definitely. It is out of control right now. They are not professional athletes. I mean, that's why we have MLB, you know,
right,
or the Frontier Land, the Independent League, or something like that.
Looking forward to speaking of Frontier. Don't want to change the subject, but looking forward to seeing the Bird Dogs.
Yep. Look forward to those other items out there past the college ranks.
Right.
That's why you're playing the college ranks, to get to that next level. And I don't get me wrong, I agree with some type of revenue distribution among the players. You know, I agree with that. But there's got to be a across the board fairness, so to speak.
And by the way,
and that's what I think. If you could roll your athletic, with revenue sharing clubs, you roll your booster clubs into your athletic department instead of having a separate entity that's part of your revenue sharing. There'll be a minimum across the board for all players, you know, whatever that is. And then, you know, if you're a starter, let's say you make more. And then if you're good enough to go get a real NIL deal, which is what it was supposed to be to begin with, where you're legitimately signing a contract with somebody to do something, to advertise for them, et cetera, then great. Otherwise, you're getting paid whatever revenue sharing you can get. But right now, what they're calling NIL deals aren't a bit more NIL deals than a man in the moon. You know, you're basically doing what SMU did, what they got the death penalty for. It's no coincidence SMU hasn't been good in football until this came out, you know, where they can pay players again. SMU is the only school in the world that went, yes, we can pay players again.
Yeah,
right. And, you know, suddenly they're in the ACC. So anyway.
Hey, Coach, look at speaking of the ACC, we're talking about NIL. One of former basketball player for the Pirates, Brandon Johnson, goes to an absolute train wreck of Miami. Jim Larrañaga resigns. I mean, look at Kyle. I know you're not a basketball guy, but you are a smart individual, smart dude. They are 2-14 in the ACC, 6 wins, 21 losses in basketball. And they've just had a lot of problems with – I think they've had a lot of problems with – just because here's another thing I want to mention to
– Florida, look at Florida State in football. I mean, they had one of the most expensive rosters out there, and they were the drizzling chips this year. So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, lots of time spending that money pays off, but sometimes it's a gamble. And in the case of Miami, you know, they lost their head coach. Lawsuits are being threatened. All that kind of stuff, they're horrible. And then look at Florida State football this year.
John,
well, I think it should go back to – I didn't mean to cut you off, but let me just throw this in there.
Okay.
Production. You know, if you produce as well as a head coach of any team,
yeah.
Hey, if you have – you know, if you want to set standards, if you have a 40-win baseball season, no matter what program it is, you get X amount of dollars. The players get a XYZ. If you win
the conference. That's not allowed right now, Coach. You can't be incentivized. I agree with you. I think that would be a great way to do it.
Yes. Yep. And it's across the board. Now, if you and all three of us are on the same team, we're playing at East Carolina, whatever sport it may be, take your pick.
I'll be on the bench.
Girls volleyball.
But we're revenue shared across the board. But Kyle goes out there and gets a deal with Nike. I'm over here trying to, you know, scramble to get a deal with, you know, Circle K or something. And you're over here sitting the bench, but you get a deal with somebody else. That's entirely different. You know, that's entirely different. There should be a limit on that. Maybe so. I don't know how you control that because it's a different entity. But as far as shared revenue for any team, I think all players should get paid the same. Starters, or maybe starters should get paid a little bit more. I don't know how. Right now it's so out of control. You would have to bring it back, put it on the table, and see what is fair.
What I would do if it were me, and I'll use football as an example, because it's what I'm, you know, it's what I'm most passionate about. I would do across the board, if you're not a starter, the same. And then my starters would make more based on position. Your quarterback needs to be in football, needs to be the most top A guy on your team. Your starting quarterback. And then after that, it would be my starting offensive lineman, my starting defensive lineman, my receivers, so and so. But they would all, there would be a level. You would know if you're coming to East Carolina and you're a quarterback, you're going to get paid the most. If you're an offensive lineman, you're going to get paid the most. Your receiver, you see what I'm saying? You would know coming in, and you would know if you're a star, this is what you're going to make.
Right. And if you break into that starting position, you get a little upcharge, a raise or whatever. Merits, you know, you maybe on a merit program or however you want to, you know, characterize it. But right now, it's totally out of control.
It's the Wild West.
Yeah, it's and I don't blame the college players. Hey, I can go over here and get paid four times what I'm getting paid here. But then again, it goes back to commitment in the program that you started with, like y'all were talking about earlier, about a young man. In 4 years, he played at four different schools. There's no commitment anymore, and we're losing sight of what college athletics are. It's not it is a business now, but it wasn't before. Not when I came along, it was college athletics. And I had a heck of a time. I've got all the memories in the world. I am very fortunate and blessed that I played on a 1989 national championship. There is no money that can buy that from me whatsoever. That means more to me than any dollar sign.
Yeah, and I think the best example of money kind of, you know, guys let money ruin his things for him. I'll use an example close to home, Dontavius Nash for the football team. Gets the game-sealing interception in the Military Bowl against NC State. Then goes and acts a complete fool in the locker room, raising hell, cussing about how he's going to get MF and paid and everything else in front of Coach Harrell's kids and his wife, Jessie, and several other people that were in the locker room celebrating the bowl win. And he was told to hit the portal the next day, and he's still in the portal.
Right.
If he'd have just kept his mouth closed and, you know, been humble about it, because he's not really good enough to get paid. He would have gotten paid. He would have been sitting there with Rajay signing autographs, making money the way NIL should be, off your merit, off of what you did. Rajay probably made more damn money from December through February signing autographs and making appearances than he had his whole career. And Nash would have been sitting right there with him, signing an autograph of him making that interception.
Yeah.
But he let his ego get in the way. And right now, he's not even a Division I player. Nobody has picked him up out of the portal.
That's a situation
where a kid let the I made a big play in a bowl game, now I'm going to get paid, ruin his career.
Well, yeah. See, I blame the people that have made the decision at NIL because of his decision. Because he was looking past.
Yep.
And it's dollar signs. That's all it is. And don't get me wrong. Hey, if I could get a raise, you know, doing what I'm doing somewhere else, you know, I'd probably look at it too. I'm in education, for God's sakes. I love what I do, but it goes back to commitment and pride. Commitment and pride. And we have lost sight of all that. The dollar signs have consumed our young players and the parents, and they think grass is always greener on the other side, and it is not.
No.
Yeah.
Some kids find out the hard way when they enter that portal, and then, you know, nobody picks them up, or they go somewhere else just to go somewhere else and don't get paid there either. I think what happened with Nash is a great example, and it's a good learning tool for all players. You better know before you hit that portal, you better know your value and your worth, or you may get hung out to dry.
That's right.
But,
yeah. And don't burn any bridges along the way.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know what? If he wanted to hit that portal and go look, and he would have went to coach and have been respectful, and I, like a complete idiot, said, "Coach, I want to see what's out there. You know, would I be welcome back if things don't go my way?" You know, he might have got a different response from Coach Harrell. But you talk about burning bridges, that's exactly what Nash did. This is a baseball discussion. Just use it as an example.
Yep.
And there's plenty of times that's happened in baseball, too.
Yes, sir.
Where people do that thinking they're bigger and better than the team. And, Coach, you know very well that it takes a team to win a national championship. And it's about time to wrap things up. But I hope everybody has a great week. Hopefully we have a great baseball week to talk about. And good luck to the Pirates tomorrow night against the Tar Heels. We have Old Dominion, the Monarchs, on Wednesday. Let's see, Thursday is Kent State. We have Indiana State on Saturday and Virginia Tech on Sunday, the Keith Clare Classic. And then
Thursday. Are we playing Kent State on Thursday, or did you just misspeak about Friday?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sorry. Friday,
yep.
Saturday, Sunday for the Keith Clare Classic. So good luck to the Pirates. It's going to be an extremely busy week. But, Coach, welcome to Extra Innings, our family. We have open arms and just waiting on that trip to Puerto Rico, man. I will hold my breath.
We'll talk about it on behind the scenes, and then we'll flabbergast everybody about when and where.
Yeah, guys. Next week we'll have more breakdown details of the games. This week, not a lot of video coverage. We were playing on the road for a couple of them. Coach has been sick. I was not able to catch any of the games because there was no video until they saw today's game. But we'll have more details, more breakdown of the games in depth next weekend, as all the games will be in Greenville and will also be streamed.
That's right.
Nothing like it. Nothing like Greg Pearson Company. Thank you to the production staff. They do a fantastic job. Thank you, guys. Thanks to all our viewers and listeners. Thank you, Coach. Thank you, Kyle.
Hey, I appreciate being part of it.
Certainly. But Sunday night, it's Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. And as always, go Pirates.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.